You're listening to Literature Done Juicy, a show that explores books in the juiciest way possible. My name's Jade, and this is our third season. And for this season, we are going to be focusing on books that contain themes of researchers. Now, the first book that we're going to be talking about in this lovely episode today is Bear by Marianne Engel. Today's episode is extra special because we are doing a collaboration with our local bookstore, which is the Bookbird up on Packington Street in Geelong West. If you want to buy Bear, I have left a link in the show notes. It's actually quite funny because the reason Bear is included in this season is because Charlotte, who works at the Bookbird, so hello Charlotte, she recommended it for the researchers theme, and also because she thought that it would fall quite perfectly into the Literature Done Juicy canon. And it is very, very messed up. It is very, very gross. So she's totally right. Okay, my thoughts. Now, I come from a police background and also worked as a case manager for offenders on community corrections orders. I've seen and I've read a lot of messy, disgusting, sexualized content, but this was actually quite a hard read. Now, the content itself is shocking, but the reason I found it difficult to read is because it just didn't really make any sense, and I'll get into why. Now, when offenders and criminals, sex offenders, whatever you want to call them, commit these heinous, disgusting acts, they usually have a reason behind it. They have a motive, and they're usually quite articulate with this reason, or it's quite obvious with their actions what this reason is. Lou, who is the main protagonist in Bear, doesn't really seem to have a reason, and she doesn't explain it either in her internal monologue. I can see what the author was going for. It was published in the 70s, which was during the second wave of feminism. So obviously it was a different time to what we are in now. Women were repressed. Colonization had occurred within Canadian history quite recently, and the Canadian natural world was slowly being built upon. But the whole sex of the bear thing to me just didn't really need to happen. But having said all this, this is going to be a fun one. So let's get into it. Here is the plot breakdown in its most simplest form. So a librarian or an archivist is called to a small Canadian island to catalogue a book in an estate of a secretive colonel. And this colonel owns a bear. The librarian, who is very lonely and hates men, has sex with said bear. Well, not sex. She tries to have sex. She does sexual acts with the bear on multiple occasions. So it's very much 50 Shades of Grizzly. So there you go. There is the plot in a nutshell. Now, I'll go over some of the characters. We have Lou. She is our main protagonist. She is a literal fiend. She's 27 years old and, like I said, an archivist slash librarian by trade. We then have Bear, local resident of the house Lou is cataloguing, rape survivor of Lou. Then we have the director, who is Lou's boss. Lou has sex with their boss, but it doesn't mean anything. They don't really have much of a relationship. Then we have one of the final main characters, if you can even call him that, and his name is Homer. He is a sexist married man who Lou has sex with once, but then decides that she prefers to get it on with the bear instead. Now, before I dissect some of the nastier themes, I'm going to have to dive into some history around the publication of Bear and Canada as a whole at that time. I know I briefly mentioned colonialism and feminism, but let's go a little further. When Bear was first published in 1976, it was received generally well by critics. The Global Mail at the time regarded it as having a fine use of understatement, control, and economy. It was touted positively globally as well, not just in Canada. It won the Governor General's Award in 1976, and one of the main members of this panel was Alice Munro. The book itself was actually given a grant by the Canadian Council for Arts to be written. So this government body read a draft of Bear and was like, yes, let's give a grant to this writer so that she can post some bear porn. It's quite fascinating, really. So like I said, Bear was released during the time of the second wave of feminism. But why is this wave different to the first? So the women's movement, which was during the period of 1960s to 1985, is often referred to as the second wave feminist movement. And this movement included campaigns in support of peace and disarmament, equality in education and employment, birth control, and then also an end to violence against women. So similar to the suffrage campaigns, there were now new women and new men associated with counterculture. This counterculture were hippies in a nutshell. And women's liberation drew on both the older and newer critiques to question sexuality and power relations. So I guess you can say that this novel, in a way, is going up against the sexuality and power dynamic of this era. Some argue that Bear is the epitome of women's sexuality and power relations, and that Lou would rather have sex with a bear than have sex with a man like Homer is a prime example of this. Personally, I can't decide if this book is a grossly written feminist novel entwined with Canadian tradition through a narrative of, you know, who needs men when we can have sex with bears, or if it's supposed to be a satire or comedy. I actually do not know. Academics do argue that there are two lenses that you can read Bear through, and one is the romantic lens and the other is the realist lens. Reading through a romantic lens, you would see Lou's final destination as a form of rebirth. So basically a feminized version of the Canadian wilderness and Lou just becoming one with nature. The realist reading is more so, it is a means of living and working under one's own terms as a woman. Personally, I disagree with both of these readings. For both of these to work, there needs to be a heavy focus on surrealism and symbolism throughout the other parts of the book, but there just isn't any. So other than the bear porn, we are really just reading a couple of really beautiful descriptions of the Canadian landscape, which I will admit are written extremely well. Or you've just got these dry, daily, monotonous routines that Lou is doing. There's no surrealism. There's no other symbolism. It's just those two types of writings entwined with the sexual exploitation of a bear. Bear definitely falls under the gothic genre as it uses the uncomfortable and also the sexually wrong, but I don't really believe this was done on purpose by Marianne Engel. Lou is clearly mentally unwell, which is another, you know, prime gothic trope. And if the roles were reversed and we were reading about a man having sex with a bear, then people would simply find it messed up. It wouldn't really be seen as a political message. I know that Bear has been studied by academics as it is a Canadian classic, but for me, Bear is basically just a boring book with some zoo porn scattered in. It also takes forever to get to the main event. So wading through half of the book of just boring writing and then bam, you get your gross scene. So the sex scenes are really disgusting and the heroine is also having an affair with a married man. So she's got two very morally wrong things going on in her life. The bear doesn't like it when he actually smells this other man on her. And when she actually goes to try and have sex with the bear, he gets overexcited and then claws up her back so badly. She gets a fever and has to lie down in a blood-soaked shirt. So obviously this bear thing isn't going too well for Lou. I'm also not sure if this is supposed to be an allegory for a woman's sexual awakening, but if that's what it is, like, count me out. Obviously, bestiality is illegal, and what our not-so-lovely protagonist is doing is ick, but why does society consider it wrong? There are a few reasons. First being perversion. Simply meaning sexual activity with an animal is abnormal behavior, much like how I wouldn't take a job in an old home to catalyze a library and then get a bear to perform cunnilingus, yeah? Like, it's not normal. It's not the norm thing to do. Then we have consent. Animals cannot speak, therefore they cannot consent. You're technically raping this animal. Lou is technically an animal rapist. Lou copped the grunt of this as well when the bear decided that he didn't want to have sex with her and clawed up her back. Then the third is health risks. There are over 200 diseases which can be passed from human to animal and vice versa. And of these, three of the most dangerous that you can catch are leptospirosis, which is caught by any contact with sexual organs of dogs, cattle, pigs, horses, and sheep. And it's a bacterial disease that can cause meningitis, which leads to death in about 10% of cases. You can also catch a parasitic worm from the feces of dogs, cats, sheep. And this worm can cause cysts in the lungs, liver, brain, spleen, heart, and kidneys. And if not treated, it can be fatal. And then the third most common is rabies. So we all know what that is. It's one of the most severe of the diseases, and rabies is transmitted from the saliva of these animals. It is a viral infection which defects the central nervous system and is almost fatal unless treatment is found straight away. Currently in Canada, like Australia, pets are considered property, not technically living things. So the laws that surround them revolve around owning an item, which is actually extremely concerning for animal activists. Only since 2019 have animals been properly protected by the bestiality law within Canada, as bestiality itself was never actually properly defined within the legislation until then, which created this loophole in bestiality laws in Canada. So here is a brief history on these laws, because this is something I was not aware of. 2019 really wasn't that long ago. So within Canada, bestiality laws originated from English common law, which was rooted in the Victorian concepts of morality. This law termed any unnatural penetration by human or animal of penis or vagina to be illegal, including other offences such as sodomy or buggery. This included between human and human, and it also included between human and animal. These offences ended with life imprisonment and began in 1866. The offence itself read, "Everyone is guilty of an indictable offence and liable to imprisonment for life who commits buggery, either with a human being or with any other living creature." Then, in 1954, the Act was amended and the term bestiality was added. The offence then read, "Everyone who commits buggery or bestiality is guilty of an indictable offence and is liable to imprisonment for 14 years. So they also lessen the sentence too, if you take note of that. Then in 1985, two separate offences were created. So they created one offence for buggery, so anal sex, and then the other offence was the one which contained bestiality. From this time, bestiality offences could be found within Section 60 of the Canadian Criminal Code, and charges came with a maximum sentence of 10 years imprisonment. So again, our sentencing has dropped down. However, in Section 60, bestiality is only described as penetration, which means technically our lovely friend Lou was not actually committing a crime back in the 70s. This was highlighted in 2016, where a man was charged with 13 child sex offences against his two stepchildren and then also one count of bestiality against his dog in Canada. Now, the bestiality charge was dropped because there was no penetration involved, as he had smeared peanut butter on his penis and got the dog to lick it off whilst taping the act, which is very similar again to our lovely friend Lou, who smears honey on her own vagina to entice the bear to do the same. Animal activists have then kicked up a fuss, and rightly so, as they believe the offences should make clear that any form of sexual activity with an animal is illegal. This was finally amended in 2019 by the Supreme Court, which then made bestiality as a whole illegal within Canada. Now, with all of this said, let's lighten the mood with some bestiality sex statistics. One study estimates that 2% of the general population is sexually attracted to animals in some extent, which is disgusting. Alabama only outlawed bestiality in 2014, and get this, the state governor refused to sign the legislation, so it's a little bit shifty if you ask me. One study found that nearly one third of animal sex offenders also sexually offended against children and adults, much like our main man in Canada in 2016. There are four US states, Hawaii, Wyoming, West Virginia, and New Mexico, which still haven't outlawed bestiality. So if it's your thing, those are the places to go. The reported prevalence rates for bestiality are around 4.9% for men and 1.9% for women in normal population. And this is just statistics from the United States. Another fact is psychiatric inpatients have a higher prevalence rate of zoophilia, so bestiality, with 55% of them wanting to do it or being attracted, you know, that kind of thing. Hungary is one of the largest bestiality porn exporters, and then also dogs are the most common victim of bestiality. And I couldn't find any statistic on bears because I don't think anyone's been ballsy enough to give it a go. Okay, so now we have gone over why Lou is messed up. Let's get into how she attempts to bond with the bear, which is through a reoccurring motif, and that is of smell. To court her furry friend, Lou, from the advice of a local, begins to go to the toilet next to the bear. So she wees and poos next to him, as she believes this will allow her to bond with it. There are also many references to how disgusting the bear smells and looks, and she frequently refers to his musky odor. Now, Engel uses smells to create a vivid and immersive atmosphere, particularly through descriptions of this smell, which becomes intertwined with Lou's sexual experiences. The bear scent becomes a metaphor for the taboo and transgressive nature of Lou's relationship with the bear. Bears are also thought to have one of the best senses of smell in the animal kingdom. For example, black bears' smell is 7 times better than a bloodhound's, so they can literally smell anything. They use smell to locate food sources such as berries, insects, and small mammals, and also fish, which is also just gives me flashbacks to Bear, where he goes and finds a fish and then sticks it up Lou. And you can imagine yourself what I'm talking about and where he's sticking it. So navigation. Bears use smell to navigate their surroundings, especially in dense forests and low light conditions. They also use smell to communicate. So bears use scent marking to communicate with other bears. They may rub their bodies or scratch trees to leave behind this scent, which then conveys information about their presence, territory, and reproductive status. And I guess this is what Lou was trying to achieve by going to the toilet within the bear's space. Bears also use smells for detecting danger. They rely on their sense of smell to detect potential threats or predators within their environment. And then lastly, bears use smell to find mates. During mating season, bears use their sense of smell to find potential mates. Female bears release pheromones to attract males, and then males use their sense of smell to locate the receptive females. As the bear is a male and Lou is a female within the story, this can't really be achieved in any way, shape, or form unless bears can smell when you're ovulating. But I don't know if that's true or not. I'll have to look into that. Which is a pretty scary thought, because does that mean when you're ovulating you can't camp if there's bears around? Otherwise they're going to sniff you out and kill you. Who knows? Got to look into it. If you're a camper and you live in Canada or, you know, wherever bears live, maybe you should check that out. So smell is obviously quite important in the way that bears live and bond, which is something that Lou was attempting to do in terms of communicating and bonding with the bear in the novel. In the climax of the story, though, Lou is attacked by the bear, which mirrors to a lesser degree some of the victims of domestic bear attacks. And yes, I said domestic. The United States, for some bizarre reason, lets people own whatever animal they like, literally the strangest country ever. So here are some people who were not as lucky as Lou. In 2009, Callie Ann Waltz was a 37-year-old woman who was killed by her 350-pound black bear pet, which she kept in a rural property in Pennsylvania. The cage it was kept in was 15 by 15 feet, and it was a steel and concrete enclosure. Hardly a good environment for a bear, and it mauled her to death. And so obviously the bear absolutely loved living in a small metal cage. The second death is Brent Kandra, which occurred in 2007. He was a 24-year-old man from Ohio, and he was killed by a grizzly bear. The bear attacked him when he opened its cage for a Thursday routine feeding. The bear lived at the home of a man who kept a menagerie of wolves, tigers, and bears on the property southwest of Cleveland. So Brent was actually hired by this man to look after the animals there. And then after the bear killed Brent, his family asked the owner to euthanize the bear, and so it was killed. Then the third attack is Sandy Allman, which occurred in 2006. She was a 66-year-old woman who lived in North Carolina and was killed by her pet black bear. She had kept this bear as a pet for over 10 years before it just decided to attack and kill her. And then the last example of bears that kill their owners is Stephen Miller. So Stephen Miller was 39 years old and was from Minnesota, and he was killed by his 700-pound pet black bear. And again, the bear had been living with Stephen for several years before it attacked and killed him. So even though all of these people had developed a bond or some form of bond with these animals, they still ended up mauling them to death, and it didn't really help them in terms of survival. And this is because a bear is an apex predator. It is something that shouldn't be kept on a lead in a cage. Just does not make any sense.
Bear is definitely a weird one. I think it is a matter of taste as to whether you enjoy it or not, if you can get past the sexually explicit content that's within, as I appear to be in the minority of those who don't like it. Bear is short in size and it's filled with controversial themes, but to me, not much substance. I believe it was done in the angle of a satire, or if it was focusing more on the mentally ill individual who explained her taboo thoughts. Kind of like Lolita, how Humbert, you can hear his entire monologue about why he finds Lolita sexually attractive. It just would have worked better for me. I feel like it would have hit that mark. Whether you see it as a feminist statement, a commentary on power dynamics, or simply just this bizarre tale, Bear is certainly a book that leaves an impression. And as Marianne Angle says, I love you. Pull my head off. A big thank you to the Bookbird for collaborating with us on this episode. And remember, you can find a link to purchase Bear and explore their collection within our show notes. Support your local independent bookstores. If you've learned something new, please remember to subscribe to the podcast, rate and review if you haven't already. Our Instagram is in the description box for even more refreshing content. I'm Jade, your host at Literature Done Juicy, and until next time, bye!